Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I believe that the Second Amendment makes all of the other amendments possible. And this podcast is not too political, and it's not too radical, and not too technical. Because I am not a gunsmith, I'm not ex-law enforcement, I'm not ex-military, and I'm not a firearms trainer. I'm just a private citizen. And I believe strongly in my Second Amendment rights. So I'm going to keep it real and talk about guns. So let's get started with the show.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Okay, everybody, thanks for downloading episode number 83. And I want to tell you that to all of you who download and listen to this, thank you very much for helping me have a great time. You know, this is a fun thing for me to do. When I do this podcast, it's kind of like playtime. And this is so much fun. You know, folks, I'm not getting rich off this. I know a lot of you have been buying tickets and supporting the show with raffle tickets and supporting some of the causes that I'm trying to support. But this is not a full-time job. It's not a money-making venture. It's just something I have a blast with. And I come to you from the perspective of just somebody who loves firearms, shooting, owning, carrying, training, with guns, mainly handguns. And I just like to talk about how much fun this is and how great of a skill this is and how much of a great right it is that we possess to be able to do this. So for me to get on this microphone here, record this, put it out to you, and you guys listen to it, man, I don't know what to say. It's just a blast. It really is, and I don't know how to thank you, but other than just putting this at the beginning of the show. So let's dive into some listener feedback before we do the interview. Now, I want to tell you, the main subject of this show is an interview. I've got Steve Zofi back on here. Matter of fact, we're probably going to try to do this once a month. Now, Steve has graciously decided to come back on to talk about calling your shots. That's the main topic. It's a good technique. It's an advanced shooting technique, especially when you're in competition sports. I think it has some self-defense applications as well, and we'll talk about that in our interview. It's a rather lengthy interview. As you know, I'm only posting these podcasts once a week now, typically on Wednesdays. So I want to give you as much value for your time as I possibly can, and we're going to do that. You're going to love calling your shots with Steve Zofi. We get into a lot of good stuff on that. Get ready to take some notes or rewind it several times because we really analyze that. We analyze it right down to the T, and we really kind of get detailed into it. So get ready for that. A little bit of listener feedback, though, here. I'll put the interview on here in about 5 minutes, but I want to cover some listener feedback. I want you guys to know that I get your emails. I read them, I listen to them, and as long as they're reasonable, I'll put them on the show. I'll talk about them. And when I say reasonable, you know, if you use profanity and stuff like that, I'm not going to put that on. I don't mind constructive criticism, but I think you guys get the point. So that leads me to the first email I want to talk about. It comes from Dave, and Dave gives me some pretty good constructive criticism that I really appreciate. Let me share it with you. He basically said that he cringes when he hears gun rights folks talk about the gun show loophole. And I did that. He pointed to a podcast that I did not too long ago where I talked about the gun show loophole. And he would rather that I not use those words because he said it's not a loophole, it's the law. And basically what he's talking about there is that buying a gun at a gun show, even if you're buying it from a private person in states where that's legal, there's nothing against the law when you do that. And that's true. So it's not a loophole. And so, Dave, you're right. I'll stand corrected on that. I should not use that language. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about gun show purchases as being the law. It's the way you can buy a gun. Now, in the state of Texas here, in a lot of states in the United States, you can go to a gun show and you can buy a gun from a private person and not have to do any paperwork. That is the law. It's not a loophole. Dave's right. I stand corrected. So I promise I won't say that again. Also, in the same email, he said that when my shooting buddy James and I were doing some IDPA coverage, that James made a comment that said, competition teaches you so much, or something like that. And and Dave's point is that he also thinks that competition could ingrain some poor habits without proper instruction. And so he sort of disagrees with that statement. Let me just say this. Dave, I agree with you on that. Yes. IDPA, USPSA, I recommend to everybody that owns a handgun. I will say, and I believe I've said on other shows, yes, it can teach you some bad habits. It can also teach you some good gun handling skills and reinforce some good habits. You have to just pay attention to what you're doing out there. This is one of the reasons why I supplement my IDPA competitions with going to some shooting classes and combat courses like close range gunfighting that I recently just spent the last two podcasts talking about. That's combat training. That's defensive training. I believe you can go to an IDPA or USPSA match, and I believe you can practice some of what you learn in combat. Not all of it. Some of it you get kicked out and disqualified because they say you're not safe. Like, for example, the 360-degree action assessments. Excuse me, 360-degree after-action assessment that we learned in close-range gunfighting that a lot of you learn. You can't do that. You can't do that at IDPA. They're going to send you home in a heartbeat because they're going to say you're pointing the muzzle in the wrong direction and you're breaking the safety rules. So you can't practice stuff like that. That's one example. So I would suggest, and let me clarify for purposes of Dave's email, I would suggest that you do both. Compete in IDPA or USPSA and do like I do, take one or two classes every year that teaches you combat and judicious uses of handguns. Okay? In other words, how to win a fight. Take classes like that. And classes on when to use and when not to use your firearm by Masoud Ayoub and many other good trainers out there that teach that angle of firearms. That's what I would strongly recommend. So thanks for that email, Dave. You are correct on both. And as I mentioned, I appreciate all types of feedback. The next one that I want to talk about comes from James. Not my shooting buddy, James, but a different James who's a listener to this show. He recently bought a couple of raffle tickets, by the way, so thanks, James. Appreciate that. Thanks for your support. He wrote to me to tell me that he's got about 1,300 rounds through his Car PM9, and he's had to send it back to Car twice due to countless failures to feed and failures to fire. He says, I must say their customer service was very poor, and they completely ignored questions that I asked them. So, well, first of all, James, let me say, you know, every gun manufacturer has its share of problems. Guns are mechanical devices, and they fail, especially semi-automatics. They're mechanical devices with moving parts in them. They have a potential to fail. My Car PM9's been flawless. I love it. But I, you're not the first one I've heard of people having challenges with them. And all guns are that way, folks. Anybody that tells you that their Glock doesn't ever have any problems is lying to you. Okay? I've never said my Glocks don't have any problems. They have the fewest malfunctions of any gun I've ever owned, but yes, I've had problems with Glocks. Not very often, but they do exist. And with other manufacturers like Carr and SIG and Kimber and Springfield and Colt and Smith & Wesson, what's some of the others that I'm forgetting? Whatever. They all have challenges, folks, and what I would suggest to you, James, is make Car make it right. Those guns cost enough money, it should work. Stay on them. I would badger the crap out of them. At the very minimum, they should give you a new gun that works right. I would stay after them. Sorry to hear about that. I'm going to continue to keep recommending the Car PM9 because overall, for its designated purpose, which is a very deep concealment, not a major primary carry gun, but an excellent backup gun with good firepower and good capacity for a backup gun, I'm going to go ahead and keep recommending that gun. But thanks for telling me about your negative experience, and as I mentioned, I'll share all experiences with you folks who listen to this show. Now, another email real quickly, and then we'll get to the interview. This one comes from Stace. And he said he's been catching up on some of my older podcasts, and he heard one where I said I don't carry an extra magazine. when I'm concealed carrying. He says, I find that a bit odd because the magazine is in a semi-automatic is what's most likely to cause malfunctions. In my humble opinion, you should carry at least one spare magazine just in case you have those issues. Well, I wrote back to Stace and I told him that later on, a couple of podcasts after I made that statement, I corrected myself because some of you also wrote in about the same thing. And I took it to heart, and I do now carry an extra magazine. I always have an extra magazine in my back pocket for whatever pistol that I'm carrying, because you are right, Stace. Yes, the magazine is likely to be the part of the gun that is going to fail you. So, keep it coming. There's more listener feedback. I will be covering it a few more of them on the next show. I want to get you listening to this interview. One more thing before I get... turn the interview on, because I'm not going to come back on when the interview's over. The end of the interview will be the end of the show. You're going to hear this podcast on September the 8th. Like I said, once a week, I try to put them out on Wednesdays. What that means is there will only be 1 week left to the Freedom Raffle. Now, I've been talking about this Freedom Raffle now for 2 months. So I'm just going to keep it real short and sweet here, folks. Don't procrastinate. I'm getting very, very close to my goal of 100 tickets. I'd like to surpass that goal. You know what you're supporting. You're supporting some good causes, not just this show, but the Gun Rights Radio Network and looks like the Second Amendment Foundation. If you don't know the details, if you're rather new to listening to this show, go to handgunworld.com. That's the website, handgunworld.com. And click the Freedom Raffle page. You'll be able to read all about it, and there's a Buy Now button on there for you to use to buy tickets. Also, I want to remind you about my YouTube channel. Just go to Handgun World Show on YouTube. Facebook, just search Handgun World Show on Facebook. And on the Handgun World page, you'll see my Twitter badge if you want to follow me on Twitter as well. I'm doing the best I can with all this social networking stuff here. And if you want to send me feedback, emails like what I've covered now, bob@handgunworld.com is the best way to do that. And last but not least, the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum. I'm not going to play their normal little commercial that I put on this show, so I'm just going to do the commercial myself. Folks, the Gun Rights Radio Network is a great forum of people. I have my own thread there. All the podcasters on the network have their own thread there. You can interact with all of us, ask a bunch of questions. There's some really seriously knowledgeable people. And what I really like is that's a very well-controlled forum. There's not a lot of people who are out of line on there, and I like that. That's good. They're a good, friendly bunch of folks. Go to gunrightsradio.com, click the forum tab, and you'll be able to sign up, get your account, and start interacting with me and everybody else that's doing shows. I listen to a lot of the shows on the Gun Rights Radio Network. I listen to the Gun Dudes. I listen to the Handgun Podcast. Of course, I listen to Pro Arms. I listen to Firearms Cafe, Personal Armament Podcast, Practical Defense with Alex Haddix. There's a lot of good ones on there. So check it out at gunrightsradio.com. Enough of the commercialism. I don't like to get into that too much. You tune in for content. That's what I'm going to give you. Here you go. 15 seconds worth of music. And Steve Zofi and I are going to talk about calling your shots. Stand by. Interview's coming up quick. Okay, once again, I'm joined by the magic of Skype, and Steve Zofi's on the phone again with me. If you recall, that was back in episode, I think it was episode 79 or 80, he was on the show, and we were just talking about general practical shooting. Are you there, Steve?
I'm here, Bob. How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for coming on the show again. I want to tell you, before we get started here, your interview with me that we did a couple of weeks back, 3 weeks back, whatever... it is the third most listened to podcast in the history of the Handgun World Show. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, but I think my mom and my sister and my dad and my, but no, I'm kidding.
So tell me, how many family members did you get to download that show?
Well, if you must know, no. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's see. You must have 1,400 family members, because there was at least, the last time I checked, there was at least 1,400 downloads to that show.
Yeah, so, well, I wish I could say it was all family, but it's not. So, well, I appreciate that. That's good to hear.
Congratulations. Thank you. So that's why I wanted to bring you on again. And you and I have kind of talked about doing this once or twice a month. I hope you're still up for that.
Definitely am. Always. I think, you know, I share the same passion that you do about shooting. I really enjoy doing it, and it's become part of my life. So
good.
Yeah, I really enjoy talking about shooting, competitive shooting, and alike.
Well, good. And we're going to talk about more competitive shooting. In this interview, everybody's been kind of waiting for it because there's been a lot of posts on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum about it. And we're going to talk about calling your shots.
Right.
Today. Now, I got to profess, I'm not as accomplished as you are at competitive shooting. I'm just an IDPA sharpshooter. I probably should be better than that after 5 years, but I haven't applied myself as well as I probably should. So I have to be honest. I don't know that much about calling your shots, so I hope that you can enlighten me.
Well, the whole entire thing on calling your shots is funny because I've heard some people say that is probably the single most important thing that you will learn to do as a competition shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to that level, and it's difficult, I think, for a lot of people to get to that level, to be able to apply it. The whole entire concept of calling your shots is really a very simple one. It's at the moment that the gun goes off, at the point of ignition, it's being able to read the alignment of the sights, the front and rear sight to each other, and then reading the alignment of the sights to the target. And the idea is that when the gun goes bang, you know on the target where the round impacts without having to look at the target or do anything like that. The whole entire thing of looking over the gun, looking at the target is just a big waste of time. The key thing to being able to call your shots is to be able to see the alignment of the sights and relative to the target when the gun goes bang. The problem is that a lot of people will end up blinking at that moment. So they can't see it. They blink right at the point that the gun goes off and they aren't able to see that. And for a lot of people, just getting over that point is a struggle in itself. And there are some techniques that you can try to eliminate the whole entire blink reflex. The idea behind the blinking is people have said, it's like holding a firecracker out the end of your hands, lighting it, and then waiting for it to go off. I mean, most people will instinctively close their eyes when that happens. But we're holding handguns out there and having them go off with a nice little big bang and a flash, and the same problem happens there. So I think for a lot of people to get over the whole entire blink reflex of either starting out with 22s, doing a lot of rimfire shooting, to eliminate the bang and a lot of the recoil. Also, in some cases, if people will, what's referred to as double plugging, so you use, you know, foam earplugs and then earmuffs on top of that to really eliminate the noise. And another technique that I've heard to eliminate or try to eliminate blinking is rather than using a target, just go to your berm, the berm of the back of your backstop or whatever, if you can do this, if you have the ability to do this, but just to shoot rounds using, trying to be aware of your facial muscles and your eyes and to just fire rounds into the berm. And the whole entire idea is to just kind of be somewhat aware of what it feels like and what your muscles are doing, and what your eyes are doing.
Goes off, you mean, right?
At the time it goes off, right. And the idea is there is to eliminate the whole entire blink reflex, because until you eliminate the blink reflex, you're not going to get to the point of calling your shots.
Okay, hang on a second. Now, let's get to blink reflex in a minute. But let's get back to calling your shots. So what you're saying calling your shots is that, for example, when you press the trigger and that gun fires, let's say your front sight is aligned a little bit too far left. If time were to stop at that point, you should be able to say, oh, my shot went to the left.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
That's what the whole entire thing is, that so when you call the shot and you see that the sights are aligned slightly, let's say the sights are aligned to the left but in the middle of the target. So we'll start from that assumption.
Okay.
You know from shooting that round will go to the left. Now there's and based on that, and that's really the second part of this discussion is, okay, now that you know this, the round went to the left, what are you going to do about it?
Okay, I see. You know, right. Well, hang on a second. Sorry, because I found – actually, maybe I call my shots and I don't know that I call my shots because a lot of times when I'm shooting IDPA or even USPSA, I will make up a shot because I saw that it went to the left and I didn't want it to go to the left. So I go, oh, crap, I better fire one more time so I can put one in the middle.
So you may actually be at that level. There's an exercise you can do to determine whether you are – or actually to call your shots.
Okay.
But getting back to what you were saying is that that's the whole entire point is that you realize the shot went to the left or it missed or you called it a miss.
Okay.
And you realize it, and at the exact moment that you see that when the at the point of detonation, mm-hmm. That you call the shot and you realize it and you immediately make it up. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to look, you don't have to do anything else. You immediately make that shot up because you know as soon as the gun went bang, you called the shot, it's to the left, and you immediately make it up.
Okay, but let me ask you a question. How do you know it went to the left if you're not supposed to be looking over the top of your slide to see where your rounds went?
Well, if you're looking over the top of the slide, you're not calling your shot, and calling your shot is knowing that it went to the left.
Yeah. And knowing when you didn't even look at it, you know it went to the left because you know your sights weren't aligned properly. I got you.
Right. You're reading, and so calling your shots has sometimes been called reading the gun. And the idea there is really what we're talking about is that when at the point of detonation or the point of going bang, you are seeing your sights. You know the alignment of your sights, you know the position of your sight on the target, and you know then where the shot goes. Now, here's the part about how to determine whether you're really calling your shots. An exercise you can do is go out and set a target, let's say, at about 15 yards.
Okay.
And go out and fire, let's say, 5 rounds. And after you fire those 5 rounds, you have a drawing or a picture of a target to your right. And you mark on that target, this is where round 1 went, where round 2 mm-hmm. went, where round 3 went, where round 4 went, where round 5 went. Then you go down and you look at the target.
And so would you say fire 5 rounds and keep track of where 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 went?
Exactly. You mark that on a piece of paper that's going to basically be an image of the target or a copy of the target. And you walk down range and you look and you see if what you called in your mind and wrote down the piece of paper agrees with what happened on the target.
I see. Okay.
And that's basically one of the exercises that you can do for calling your shots.
Good suggestion. All right.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah,
you know, and the reason I'm asking you to go through this is because, you know, there's no doubt there's some people that are listening to this show for the first time or they've only listened to a couple of episodes. And maybe they didn't listen to some of the previous ones. So that's why I wanted you to explain how do you practice calling your shots?
Well, for me, the whole entire, I don't really have to, at this point, practice it, so to speak. I mean, the beginning, when you're starting to work on it, practicing is what
What would a newbie do? What would a newbie do to practice it?
You really need to shoot from a open awareness standpoint of just being aware of everything. And an aware mind or an awareness, point of shooting will allow you to start seeing things that you don't normally see. You don't want to go and really force yourself and say, okay, I'm going to look really hard at the sights. I'm going to look really hard at the target. I'm going to fire my round and then I'm going to say that I'm calling my shot. That takes too long and that's not what calling your shots is all about.
Okay.
So when you're really kind of in the beginning stage of doing this, you want to, you know, bring the sights up on target. Either, you know, depending on the difficulty of the shot or whatnot, but get what you normally would define as your sight picture mm-hmm. and fire the round. We don't want to do this real slow fire because the slow fire gives you too much time to think. You don't want to, like, fire the shot and then think, okay, that was, 3 or 4 inches to the left. We want to get to the point where you fire the shot and you immediately know that it was 3 or 4 inches to the left.
Yeah, you know before you actually see it hit the target.
Right.
Or I guess let me say, okay, you're not going to see it hit the target. But before you see the hole in the paper, you mm-hmm. already know before you saw that where your shot went, right?
Yes, but the point I'll add there that you said about seeing the hole in the paper, you don't ever want to be seeing holes in paper.
Okay, you don't want to see holes in paper. That's right.
No, No, we.
That means you're looking over the top of your gun, which you shouldn't.
Exactly, or you're firing, stopping, and looking to see, you know, it's, you know, fire and assess, or fire and score on your own shots. You don't want to do that. You never want to be stopping, looking over the gun, and looking for what you just did.
I mean, okay, wait a minute. Let me ask you a question, because this is one of my weaknesses. All right, so you're going to help me here, as you're helping everybody else listen to this show. When I am shooting, and I'm thinking IDPA here, when I fire, I can tell within a fraction of a second where that shot went, because I can see the damn hole in the piece of, in the cardboard. Now, should I not be seeing that hole? Am I still waiting too long? Should I be firing again because I already knew where that went, or what?
At what distance are we talking?
Well, typical IDPA distances, which are between 7 and 12 yards.
You're looking over the gun.
I am. Okay, yeah. That's my problem.
Yeah, if you, let's think about this. From a normal target transition, anytime, you look at the target, your vision starts coming back to your gun, comes back to the front sight.
Right.
You see, well, this is what we kind of, some would describe before, but you see what you need to see. You see enough of your front sight or whatever you need at that point to make the shot. If you are then transitioning your view back out 7 yards, 7 to 12 yards back out to the target, then you are definitely looking over the gun.
Okay, well, that's part of my problem right there.
And that has to be taking at least, I would probably say, a half a second to do that.
Yeah, it sure is. It probably is taking a half a second,
Yeah, I mean, if you were doing this at like 2 yards or something, just literally in point contact distance, in terms of point shooting, you're looking at the target, you're looking through the sights, and depending on how fast your splits are, or whether you need to run somewhere else or whatever, but you're literally looking through the gun and looking at the target. And I was going to say, if you're like 2 yards, 2 or 3 yards, and you see your rounds, you know, hit the target, then I would say, okay, well, that's, you know, just because you're so close that it really, you can't help but see your rounds, especially if you're looking through the sights and doing this. But if you're talking 7 to 12 yards, if you're seeing holes in targets, you're definitely coming in and going all the way back out in terms of what your eyes are doing.
Okay, well, you know what? You've just helped me identify a problem with my shooting then. And thank you. And I bet there's a lot of people listening to this that are going to relate to that, because I bet there's a lot of people who listen to this that do the same thing. They're looking over the top of their gun.
Yeah, if you're firing around and then you kind of like drop the gun down and look, or you pop your head up and look over or whatever, but it kind of sounds almost what you're somewhat describing there. And the idea between calling your shot, and when you said a fraction of a second, I was thinking, okay, well, how long are you defining as a fraction of a second?
I don't know. I've never timed it, but you know, you're probably right. It probably is a half a second.
Well, okay. So in the terms of calling your shot, I'm thinking, you know, typically there you fire and you're making a makeup shot within 0.1 to 0.2 seconds after you do it.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. Like if we have to Mozambique two targets, for example, two to the body, one to the head, a lot of times I'll fire two to the body, one to the head. And I realize after I fired that one to the head, oops, I got one that's 3 points down on the body shot. I need to make that up. So am I still looking over the top of the gun at that point?
So you fire two to the body, one to the head, and then and then you realize that your one to the body is a down three.
Yes.
And then you make that up.
Yes.
Okay, so what did you do to realize that?
I mean, I guess I had to look at the target, didn't I?
Well, maybe. I mean, because the part there that I'm not really certain about is that you went two to the body, and your mind may have gone, okay, that second one or that first one to the body was a down three, but I'm going to go up to the one to the head and get, you know, finish that part. But your mind is processing still that one was low, and then you come
you're
down.
You're right.
And,
That's exactly what I do. I knew when I fired it, one of my shots in the body was off, but I thought in a split second, I thought, screw it. I'm going to go ahead and make my head shot, and then I'll make it up later if I have to. Make up a body shot later.
So you may actually be reading, you know, reading your sights or calling your shot on target.
I may actually be calling
like
my
that.
Shots, yeah.
Because, I mean, there it's like what happens is that you fire to the body – your mind, if it is, you know, reading the alignment of the sights on the target, will realize that one of those is a down three or knows that it's off. And yeah. You complete and you go back up to the head, and then your mind goes, I know that one was low. I'm going to go back down there and make it up.
Okay, so I knew it was low before I actually even looked at the target, and you're right. You're right.
But don't ever use the word look at the target anymore.
Okay, I'll stop. I'll stop saying look at – all right, good, good. I'll stop saying look at the target. I felt that it went low.
Yeah, no, that's it's not so much a felt. As if you're calling a shot, you know – I mean, it's like your instincts tell you – I mean, I hate to use the word instincts there, but – because that kind of like violates the whole entire calling your shot thing, but your mind, you know, is capturing all this data when you're shooting, and when you're shooting, it saw that the sights were either off alignment or the position of the sights on the target were not where it wanted it to be, and it remembers that, and it allows you then to go back and make that up.
Okay, and this is really good stuff. Thank you. This is I won't use the words looking at my target again.
Hey, never look over the gun. Never look for holes in paper targets.
And let me remind people who are listening to this, Steve's a master class shooter at USPSA. So that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have him come on this show and talk about this, is because I'm nowhere near at that level right now. So this is good stuff. Keep going.
So I was going to say the next thing, though, is that once you call your shot, and you know that it's, let's say, not exactly where you wanted it to go, the question now is, what do you want to do about it? And in IDPA, if I remember right, you have a zone C. Well, I'm sorry, I almost called it a C zone, the down one and a down three.
Zero, one, two, and three.
What's two?
Wait, no. Zero, one, and three. I'm sorry. Zero,
okay,
one, and three.
Yeah. So a one is a down a half a second, and a three is down 1.5 seconds.
Correct.
If you call an IDPA a down one, you have to look at how long, and this is going to depend on the skill of the shooter and how fast they can make it up and how accurate they can make it up. But if you look at it from the standpoint of down one, you've got basically a half a second to make up that shot. So at that point there, it's probably not beneficial to go ahead and try to make up a down one.
True.
Because of the amount of time. I mean, you know, you're going to react to it. Let's say you've got, you know, 0.2 or 0.3 second splits from the point that you realize you need to go back and do something about it. So it's going to take you at least 0.2 or 0.3 seconds to, you know, reacquire the sights on the target. So you really just saved yourself 0.2. And that's assuming that you actually made a follow-up shot that's a down zero. If it's a down three, 1.5 seconds, that is definitely something, or a miss, that definitely is something that you want to make up.
Yeah, because I can probably make it up in less than a second and a half.
Yeah, I mean, you had a second and a half to fire an extra round on the target. I mean, that's eternity, if you think about it.
Well, yes, for experienced shooters. Now let me say something for the benefit of the new shooters here, because you know, there are a lot of new shooters that listen to the Handgun World Show. And I keep getting emails from people doing this for the very first time that keep emailing me all the time. And, you know, if you're brand new, I would suggest, and tell me if I'm wrong, Steve, I would suggest just shoot the damn stage and go on with, you know, finish it up and finish it safely and just concentrate on being safe at first.
Right, and definitely the newer shooters, and I probably should back up here and say that a lot of stuff that we've been discussing, calling your shots,
right,
you know, point shooting, looking through the sights, shooting for the subconscious, stuff like that. This is really advanced shooting techniques, and in the very beginning when you're first learning to shoot,
yeah,
you want to focus on the fundamentals. You want to focus on the front sight.
That's right.
So all the stuff that I've been talking about before in the past of, you know, looking through the sights and whatnot, or shooting with both eyes open or things of that nature. I would say this is more kind of advanced stuff after you've been shooting for a while. But the very new shooters who are really new to either pistol shooting or action sports or whatever, you want to strive to be safe, and you want to strive to, see the front sight on the target and, you know, I don't want to say go slow. I don't want to tell anybody go slow, but, you know,
no,
don't feel the need to go fast. shoot as slow or as fast as you need to shoot and get down zeros or A-zone hits or things of that nature.
Exactly. So, now, let's transition to the more experienced shooters. So back to calling your shots. So you, a person who's calling their shots is not looking at the target, so I won't use that again, but somebody who's experienced, they know, because when that trigger pressed and that gun fired, they know, oh crap, you know what, I shot that one to the right. They know it before they even they know it as soon as the gun went off, right?
As soon as the gun goes off, they know it. And I've actually heard the whole entire concept of calling your shots. I think Brian Eno said this once. He said that it's probably something that most A-class and shooters below don't do. He felt that it was something that only masters and grandmasters actually know the importance and know the ability to call their shot. That may not be true. Because I know some really good A-class can tell where I'm focused. I know some really good A-class shooters that I'm certain are calling their shot. One thing I was going to say in terms of USPSA shooting, it gets even more confusing in USPSA of what to do about it, because in USPSA they have this thing called hit factors, and it's probably the one thing that confuses more people about what USPSA scoring is all about, is the whole entire concept of hit factors. But it actually tells you, hit factors tell you a lot of information. Hit factor is the way that USPSA stages are scored. A hit factor is nothing more than your points divided by your time. So let's say you have a stage that is 50 points and you shoot it in 10 seconds. Okay, so 50 over 10 is a hit factor of 5. What that means is that you're getting 5 points per second, or you can take the inverse of that, and I don't want to get too heavy in the math here, but the inverse of that is going to be 0.2 seconds per point, okay?
Okay.
So let's go back to the concept of calling your shot, and you are aiming for the A zone, and you realize that you just got a C zone hit. Now, if we're shooting major, that's minus 1 point. If you're shooting minor, that's minus 2 points.
Okay.
And that's the whole entire power factor thing. But at any rate, so if you're shooting, let's say, let's take this discussion from a shooting minor standpoint. You're 2 points down. 2 points represents, at a 5-hit factor stage, 0.4 seconds.
Okay.
So you ask the question, okay, can I make that shot up in 0.4 seconds? You may be able to make that shot up in 0.4 seconds.
If you're a really good shooter, yeah.
And depending how close the target is, again, and the accuracy of the shooter comes into play. If they get a D-zone hit, that is going to be 4 points down. So 4 points times 0.2 is going to be 0.8 seconds. And yes, in that case there's a very good chance that they can make that shot up. So let's amp this up a little bit. So let's say it's a 50, again, we'll go back to the same 50-point stage, but the targets are like right in your face, they're wide open, and you can shoot it in 5 seconds. Okay, so now we're talking a 10-hit factor. 10-hit factor is 10 points per second, or take the inverse of that, it's 0.1 points, or a tenth of a point every second.
Okay.
So if you now go back to that same C-zone hit, you're minus 2 points for minor, that's 0.2 seconds. Definitely in this case here, not worth your effort to go after making up that hit. Now let's go look at a D-zone hit. D-zone hit is 4 points down at 0.1 seconds, or a tenth of a point per second is 0.4 seconds. Again, probably not worth your effort to go and make that shot up.
Probably not.
And because as the hit factor goes up, it's all about speed. It's all about speed. You can drop a few points, but it's all about speed. So, at a D-zone hit, a 10-hit factor stage, you've got 0.4 seconds to make that shot up. And depending on the difficulty of the shot, you might be able to do it. It might be beneficial. Again, it really depends on the stage, how close the targets are, how quick the shooter is, how fast they are on the trigger, the ability to get back onto that target and do something about it. So that's where in USPSA it gets a little grayer in this whole entire idea of whether I should go and do a makeup shot or not, because if it's a low hit factor stage, it's definitely in your best interest to go and do it. If it's a high hit factor stage, you may just want to let it go.
Well, and that's where the art of competition shooting, I think, really comes into play because, you know, I think the more you do this, the more you'll probably get the feel of when you need to make up a shot. Would you agree?
Yeah, yeah, I definitely do. I mean, the whole entire thing, and I usually speak in terms of USPSA, but the same thing probably crosses over to IDPA, is that you know, the more you do it, the more you know, and the more you know, the more automatic it becomes that you really just, you know, you go into autopilot, so to speak, and your mind basically takes care of the shooting for you, and you don't have to really think about it at all.
Okay, now, Steve, let's transition everything we've talked about to this point. Let's transition it to self-defense for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two or three weeks ago, I think it was a couple weeks ago now, when I took close-range gunfighting with Suarez International, a lot of what we did was point shooting. But hearing you say what you're saying, I still think about, I go back to that weekend, because a lot of what we were doing was shooting from retention or shooting from what some people call the number three position after you draw, where the gun is basically right in front of you. You're holding the gun parallel to the ground, and it's right in front of your stomach.
Right.
And I'm firing. I have no choice but to look at the target because I don't have the sights up to my eye level yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But doesn't calling your shot still kind of come into play there? Because the way I'm looking at this is I know where I've hit, and I know whether I need to, in terms of defensive purposes, whether I've hit him in a spot that's going to stop him or not. I can basically tell from where I think the shot went, right?
Well, yeah, but you're probably there again looking at the target when you do this. And what
you're right,
you're kind
I
of
am.
Describing, what you're kind yeah. of describing reminds me of the kind of the thing in sort of the, I don't want to call it hip shooting or whatever, but a lot of times you used to see like the cowboy type shooters or whatever is they draw the gun and they'd hold it basically, you know, kind of like right out in front of them. And they have like a tin can on the ground or whatever and they'd shoot and they'd be able to, you know, knock the tin can all over the place. And a lot of that is probably to a certain degree of, you know, I guess a hand, mind, eye sort of feedback thing where the mind knows the position of the wrist, the position of the gun, where the can is or whatever the case is on the target and where to fire. But it also, I mean, you know, if you miss and you go low, the mind sees that and goes, okay, that was 3 or 4 inches low, so therefore I'll make a slight correction. So it kind of like walks the rounds into the intended point.
That's right.
The true test of what you're talking about is if you could do it in, let's say, a dark room or a low light room where you can't actually see the holes in the target and you fire from the retention or the third point in the traditional 5-point draw step and hit the target. And that probably is going to take a lot of practice to get the whole entire, you know, thing down where your mind knows where to position, you know, the grip angle and the position of the gun and everything to be able to do that.
And all this takes a lot of practice. You're right.
Oh, it does. Yeah, a lot of practice to do that sort of a thing.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, you know, if I think real defense, real life defense for a minute, the chances are you're probably going to have to fire once, maybe twice, before you actually get a clean sight picture. You think? What's your opinion on that?
You know, the thing is there, okay, you may not even see a sight picture, or at least remember seeing a sight picture.
Right.
So this kind of result or harkens back to something that I shifted to doing years ago. I was very much a front sight focused shooter. And when I talked before about learning to point shoot or, you know, shoot through the gun and whatnot, I read an interview. I don't want to get too deep into this at this point, but it was an interview with Brian Enos, and he was talking about his early days of shooting with Rob Latham. And he was saying that to a certain point that he and Rob were pretty much neck and neck in terms of shooting. And then all of a sudden, one year, Rob just took off, and Brian said that he couldn't keep up with him. And he said what Rob was doing is he was looking at the target. He quit looking at the sights or using a hard front sight focus and started looking at the target. And I was a B-class shooter at that time, and I was kind of like stuck in B-class. I wasn't really going anywhere. wasn't going up, wasn't going down, and I kind of thought, I need to do something different. So I started thinking about this, and I thought, well, okay, not only from a competition point does looking at the target make sense, but also from a defensive standpoint, if you're looking at a defensive use of a handgun, it makes a lot of sense, because if you are threatened by somebody, what is the thing that's going to hurt you, your front sight or the person that is coming at you? So where are you going to put your attention?
On the person coming at you.
Yeah, it's not going to be in your front sight. It's going to be at the person coming at you.
That's right.
So at that point there, I realized this is a double benefit, because learning to actually look through my sights at the target in a defensive situation, the person or whatever is my greatest threat. And I dare anybody, you know, in a life and death situation with somebody coming at them, to say, I'm really seriously looking at that front sight, and I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to what that guy's doing, whether he's moving to the left or whether he's moving to the right.
I dare anybody to do it too. You know, and if I can ask you to pause there for a minute, that what you just said there really came to light when I took that 2-day class. Because, you know, we learned, as most people know who listen to this show, the vast majority of defensive uses of a handgun are probably going to be 7 yards or less.
Right.
Yes, I know there's going to be times you're going to have to take a 15, 20, maybe a 25-yard shot. But my personal opinion is if you have to take a 25-yard shot, you have a lot of explaining to do.
You're going to have a hard time justifying that.
You're going to have a hard time justifying. Yeah. So, having said that, you either are going to get a sight picture or you're not going to get a sight picture. But like you said, Rob Latham, he's focusing on that target, and he's probably the kind of guy that's focusing on that target, whether that target's 5 yards away or 20 yards away, you think?
To a certain degree, yeah. I mean, a lot of the really advanced shooters that I know of will say that they are using a target focus. But I think, again, it really depends on the distance of the target and the difficulty of the shot. At 25 yards, I mean, in my experience at 25 yards, I look at the target, and then my awareness starts coming back to the front sight. And then depending on how much of the front sight that I need, if I just need a slight amount of the front sight or whatever to fire the shot, I can do that. But generally speaking, at 25 yards, I'm going to be spending a little more time on the front sight than just literally see the front sight. Okay, that's close enough, go. Because at 25 yards, like a degree, it's going to be, you know, in inches at 25 yards. So you really want a good steady hold. But everybody, I mean, in the whole entire, you know, either IDPA or IPSC circles should be, you know, you fire your shot, you snap your eyes to the next target, you find the target. Not only do you find the target, but you find where on the target that you want to fire the round. And that's key also, is that a lot of people will just see brown and they view the whole entire target as their target. The target that they should be shooting at is either the down zero or the A zone. So you need to find where on the target that you want to place a shot. Then your vision comes back to your front sight as needed. You see what you need to see, so to speak, as much as you need to break the shot, and then you break it.
Okay, so I want to get your opinion on something. Do you think calling your shots also applies to the longer distance shooting at, say, 20 yards or more?
50 yards. Oh, yeah. I've done 50 yards.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I've done 50-yard stages, and I know exactly on that target where my rounds went.
Really? At 50 yards, you know, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, really no, because there you've got a steady 50 yards. It takes, you know, a fair amount of time to make that shot. So you first see the sights on the target, and then you become very aware of what your trigger press feels like, and you know exactly where on that target your sights are.
Huh. Okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know that also applied to super long distance like that.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, you can invert this and say, okay, well, let's put a target at 5 yards and hold my sights on it for a really long time, and then, I mean, holding the sights there really makes sure I do a complete surprise break on the trigger and don't blink, and, yeah, you're definitely going to know where that round goes on the target.
Really, man, I got to try that. You're making me want to put a target out there at 50 yards.
You will.
Shooting that thing.
Round at 50 yards, and you'll see your front sight on that target. It's clear as day, and your awareness goes to your trigger finger, your press, because at that point, that's pretty much everything, and you'll know.
Okay, but at 50 yards, your front sight's going to look huge, isn't it?
Well, it depends how big your front sight is. On my STI, I got a .090 front sight, so it's a very narrow front sight.
Yeah, but still, isn't, I mean, at 50 yards, you're still going to cover up a decent amount of
park. I can completely block it out.
You can what?
I was going to say, if it's a really wide front sight, it will, I mean, it'll almost block it out.
It'll
well, it may. I mean, you know, it's interesting because, I shouldn't say that, because when I took the FAS class, one of the exercises that we had to do was shooting prone at a 50-yard target, and I knew exactly on that target where my rounds were.
Now, by the way, Steve refers to FAS for the benefit of people listening to this. He's talking about Firearms Academy of Seattle, right?
Right, right. Marty Days.
So you knew where your rounds were going even at 50 yards?
Yep, before we even walked down 50 yards and look at our hits on the target, I knew exactly where
they were. How did you know
that?
How did you know where they were going?
Just pretty much calling the shots. I mean, I
but that takes a lot of practice, doesn't it?
It's just awareness thing. I mean, you're aware of where the sights are on the target. At 50 yards, you're prone. I mean, you're locked in there. There's not a whole lot of movement.
Yeah.
And my front sight on my Glock is a .125, so it's not as wide as a normal Glock front sight at 140, but it's still fairly wide.
.125 or .090?
No, my STI is .090, so I've got a really narrow front sight on my STI, but on my Glock for carry, because I want it a little more durable, unless it gets banged or whatever, but .125 Dawson fiber optic on my Glock.
Okay, you got a Dawson fiber optic. Okay, I was going to ask you what kind of sight, and you already told me that. All right, this is interesting stuff here, because I'm trying to figure out whether I'm actually calling my shots or not. I think sometimes I am, and sometimes I'm doing something stupid like looking at the target and trying to figure out where it went.
Well, go do the exercise that I mentioned. Put your target at 15 yards, or make it really interesting and put it at 25 yards, and fire 5 rounds. And because at that point you cannot, I mean, unless you get really good vision, or you're shooting 45, at 15 yards, you probably won't see your holes. And at 25 yards, you really probably shouldn't see your holes.
No, I won't.
On the target. But at any rate, and go do that exercise where you mark it down on a piece of paper after you fire them. And fire, you know, just a few, you know, no more than 5 rounds. Because at that point, I don't think your mind, unless you want to fire a round and then mark it down, fire around, mark it down or whatnot. But, you know, fire the 5 rounds, mark it down on a piece of paper, walk down, take a look at it and see if they're where you think they're going.
That's a good exercise. That's a good exercise, and that's key. Fire 5 rounds and see if they ended up where you thought they were going to end up.
But when you do this, though, you don't want it to be a fire, think about it for a second, and go, okay, I think that was, you know, at 10 o'clock on a down zero. It should be, blam, 10 o'clock down zero, you know.
Yeah. You should know, like you say, you should know within, what, a fraction of a second, right?
As soon as the gun goes bang.
Or as soon as the gun goes bang, you should think, oh, crap, that one was left. Let me fire
exactly.
again. Okay, that
yeah,
one
I,
was
I,
right. Let me fire again.
Yesterday I shot a Glock's only match, and we had an array of targets, and I had one mic on a head zone target that was about 7 yards that I was shooting somewhat on the move, and as soon as I fired that round, it was the second round, and it was low, and I knew it was low, but unfortunately, it was kind of a hybrid USPSA match, so it was a 16-round array, and with my Glock 19, I had 15 in the mag and one in the barrel, so I had basically no extra rounds to make up anything, and I called it, I knew it, and I just kept on going, because there was nothing I could really do about it. So yeah, you instantly know as soon as it goes that you know you did it.
Okay, now, if I can get a little bit off topic here, if you don't mind. Your Glock 19 in USPSA, how's that going?
It's going fairly well. I mean, I mentioned before, my goal was to really learn to shoot the Glock 19, being my carry gun and not getting enough time in on it. And my biggest challenge with that was really trigger control and trigger reset. I messed around with the Glock before on trying to learn how to, you know, use the trigger reset to my advantage, and initially without putting a lot of effort into it, I was really horrid at it. And after doing a lot of dry fire and followed up with live fire and then shooting it in competition, I'm doing fairly well. I guess I would probably say I met my goal of learning how to shoot the gun this year, so I feel really good about that.
Well, congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. I'm hanging, I think, as well as to be expected that I can with the big dogs. So I feel, you know, pretty good about that.
Now, listen to this. I mean, folks, this is a guy that shoots an STI Edge, right?
Right.
Isn't that, didn't you email me and say that's your primary competition gun? Is it
that's
STI
Edge? Yeah. That's my primary competition. My primary division that I had shot for years, has been limited 10. And then 3 or 4 years back, I switched over to limited. So that's my main division is limited. And this year, and only this year, I decided just to switch to production because that's where the Glock 19 can play, so to speak, everybody else.
Now,
so.
To everybody listening to this, if you're relatively new, just Google STI Edge, and you'll see what kind of a gun that is. And they're fantastic guns. There's somebody in my IDPA club that shoots one of those. And
an IDPA?
No kidding, yeah.
Yep. That's amazing.
He's a gamer. Yes, he is. He's a gamer. He's shooting an IDPA. Now, I think that is CDP. No, wait a minute. No. The Edge is that a 40 cal?
You can get them in 9, 40, and mine's a 40, and you can get them in 45, so it could be CDP.
His is a 45. He's shooting it in CDP.
Yeah.
He's shooting it in custom defensive pistol. His is a 45. And
that kind of
anyway,
blows the entire intent of IDPA out of the water, but
yeah, it does.
Yeah,
but he's damn good. He's also a good revolver shooter too.
Yeah, yeah.
And, he shoots a 45 revolver, and he's good with that too.
Presumably, probably a Smith and Wesson, 625 or whatever. Probably.
He shoots a Smith and Wesson 625. I think he won, or he was either first or second at state last year with his 625.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, revolvers are not easy to shoot, from my experience. So
I don't want to mention his name because he hasn't given me permission to do that.
Yeah,
but,
no, I understand.
But he is. Yes, I'm pretty sure he's shooting an STI Edge. You said it comes in 45, right?
It comes in 45, 9, 40, and 45. Mine's
40. Okay, but the one you're shooting is 40?
Yeah, mine's 40, and that's really has to do with the whole entire limited division. In limited division, you're restricted to 140 millimeter magazine. So the idea is get as many rounds as you can into 140 millimeter magazine that still make major power factor. And 40 is considered the floor for major power factor. So
yeah.
That's the reason why everybody is shooting 40 caliber in limited division.
Okay, I have to ask you this question. I can't resist. I can't resist. No, don't worry. In terms of calling your shots, how does this fit into the average Joe that wants to get better with his or her concealed carry gun? And how does learning how to call your shots help you defensively? What's your opinion on that?
Well, that's... You know, I'm almost wondering if this is a competition-only type thing. I really, you know...
You think it is? You think calling your shots is competition-only specific?
It may be. My initial gut reaction would probably say yes. And in terms of defensive shooting, again, everything happens so fast in defensive shooting that... And the threat is... different, but still, you know, the thing with calling your shot is at least in my case, is that I'm looking typically through the sights onto the target, and it's still going to be the same thing, whether that target is a piece of paper or whether it's a human. So you're going to know, you know, placement onto the target, or, well, we're just going to call it a target for now, whether it's human or whether it's paper, of where that round goes.
Sure.
So I think you're going to know that if you are in a defensive situation and you realize that your shot is off, that you are able to say, oh, well, that's going to be, you know, a lot further left or right than where I, you know, wanted it to go. Therefore, I should fire a second shot or makeup shot or whatever more to the, you know, basically pick up the points or pick up an A zone or pick up the center of mass or whatever you want, where you want to call it. Better anyway.
Well,
so,
see,
yeah, it probably does,
you know,
cross over.
I agree with you. I've heard it said many, many, many times that accuracy and speed will win any fight.
That's true.
And competition shooting, in my opinion, teaches you that. It teaches you accuracy and speed. And something like calling your shots, I mean, here's what I think in a self-defense situation, and don't be afraid to call me all screwed up if I'm analyzing this wrong, but if I draw my gun and I've got to take care of a bad guy, and as soon as that gun fires, I think to myself, crap, you know what? I know I shot that thing left. That tells me within a split second, I've got to fire another one because he's probably not going to go down because I probably hit him in his right shoulder.
Right, right. And the key thing there, and that is, I agree with that. And the thing, key thing there, which is very true, is that, and this gets back to what we were talking about before about looking over the gun and looking for holes in targets. If it's a defensive situation, you can't, I mean, you may look over the gun, but you won't see holes in targets because, you know,
exactly.
You've got clothing on, they're not going to be bleeding where you can see holes or anything like that. So that's key there where you need to, call your shot, read the sights on the target, know whether it's, you know, where it is on the target and decide whether you need to, you know, if it's a poor shot or whatever, make it up. But again, with the defensive stuff, you know, you shoot until they stop and shoot until the threat stops. So it's a little bit of a different thing there. Like, that's why I was saying before, my confusion on it is, you know, obviously in IDPA or USPSA is that we're looking at this from a points standpoint. In a defensive shooting situation, we're looking to stop the threat. So the application is a little bit, the intended application is the same. You know, we're trying to know where we're making hits on target. But what you do with the information, I guess that's where I was, my struggling with it, is what you do with the information is really entirely different.
Well, yes, but, well, maybe so, maybe it's indifferent, maybe it's not, because, you know, let's get back to competition, let's get back to IDPA or USPSA, you know, as soon as you press that trigger, and I'm also trying to not use the terminology anymore of pulling the trigger, because it's a press.
Yeah.
As soon as you press that trigger, like you said earlier in this interview, you know where that shot went, you don't have to look at the target, you shouldn't look at the target, you know where it went, you can think within a split second, crap, I know that went left, I'm going to have to shoot again to make that up. Or you say, well, you know what, I know that was a center of the mass hit, I'm going to go on to the next shot.
Right.
Right?
Right, and that's what I was saying, that the use of the information is a little bit different, because in IPSC or IDPA, you know, it's down so many points, but on a threat, let's say you call the shot and you go, that's center, but the guy's still coming at me. You know, it's like, shoot again. The guy's still coming at me. Shoot again. Maybe he's got body armor. I'm shooting exactly where I want to be shooting. You know, I'm calling the shot and he's not stopping, you know, so then you'd say, okay, well, let's start going somewhere else. You know, like a, you know, cranial or whatever. So that's what I'm saying, that the information, the use of the information may be a little bit different, because in a defensive situation, you shoot until the threat stops. And if you call a shot and go, well, that was, you know, left of center. But if the guy stops, then you don't need to shoot again.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, and I think that even in competition shooting, see, and this is where I differ with the people that say competition shooting doesn't apply to self-defense. I 100% disagree with that, because I think that anything that teaches you to shoot fast, shoot accurate, and know where your shots are going even before you look at the target, I don't see how that could be a bad thing.
No, it's all skills is what it amounts to. I mean, the competition shooting thing is all skills that you learn, and techniques and things like that. But obviously it's not tactics. And that's the people usually are on the self-defense side will argue, and rightly so, that competition shooting does not teach you tactics. And I don't think anybody fools themselves into thinking that it does teach them tactics, but it does teach them skills.
Yeah, it teaches you skills.
Right.
And you know why I wanted to bring this up, because there's such an it was such a long thread. I mean, gosh, that thread on the forum was so long about that. But everybody made such great points, and I just happen to think that, and one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on to talk about calling your shots, I think calling your shots is important no matter what situation you're in. Whether you're in USPSA or whether somebody comes at you on the street, calling your shots I think is important.
It's definitely an advanced skill that takes time to work on and refine
and
apply. So it's not,
But I'm sure you're not saying that newbies can instantly call their shots, are you?
Not instantly. I wouldn't say so. It's really, the whole entire thing comes down to, and I've said it before, but it's kind of shooting from an open open mindset or an aware mindset and just kind of seeing everything happening as it happens. And when you get to that point, it's really strange that how your shooting abilities really just expand quickly. When you start shooting from that kind of like awareness standpoint of just kind of seeing everything and shooting from the subconscious and letting things go into autopilot, so to speak.
How does it change? When you shoot from the subconscious and letting things go into autopilot, how does your shooting change?
Because you don't, when you think of what you want to do, your focus is now directed, to what you're thinking about and what you're doing. And your shooting skills and your performance comes from the subconscious of what's going on. So here's a perfect example of how thinking can screw you up. Have you ever been in a plate rack before where you're shooting a plate rack and you're just ripping them down, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the next thought that goes through your head is, wow, this is going really well. I can't miss, right? Guess what happens next?
Oh, yes, I've been in that situation.
Yeah, and the thing is that when you're shooting and the plates are dropping, your subconscious is doing pretty much all the work and you're not having to think about what you're doing. But as soon as you start, as soon as that whole entire thought of, wow, this is going really well, all of a sudden your mind is thinking and it's taking basically, it's kind of like overriding the subconscious saying, you know, you're not in control of doing this. I'm thinking right now that this is going really well and I can't miss. It's kind of gets into the whole entire ego perspective of your mind thinking that it's in charge of everything happening and it's responsible, and the glory rides with your mind of why you're shooting really well. When you shoot from the subconscious and you're just aware of everything happening, you don't have to and you don't want to think about anything. You just really want to be aware, see the target, see the sights on the target, see as much as what you need on the target, see the sights lift out of recoil, out of the notch, settle back in. And it's really kind of a surreal experience where you're not having to think about anything that's happening at all. It just kind of like happens automatically for you. But as soon as you start thinking about making something happen, is when you kind of like short circuits the whole entire subconscious shooting experience. And again, we're talking advanced because in the beginning phase of things, with, you know, new shooters or whatnot, they literally have to think front sight, front sight, front sight.
Yes.
But when you start getting to advanced state, you don't want to be thinking front sight, front sight, front sight, because you're thinking this and all of a sudden your process of thinking is not letting the subconscious do what it needs to do. You really just need to be in this sort of like non-thinking state, so to speak, of letting the subconscious take care of everything.
Well, you know where that happened to me? A few months back, I shot a man-on-man steel plate match. And doggone it, there was one stage I was up against a pretty good shooter, and I draw that gun out of my holster. I was shooting my Glock 34 at the time, and three shots, three plates of steel drop, and I'm thinking, man, I got this down. And I don't even remember seeing the sights. I really don't. I drew the gun and bam, bam, bang, and then three steel plates drop. Here's the problem. We had to do a mandatory reload before the last plate. I do a mandatory reload and I start thinking about it.
Right.
And doggone it, if I didn't shoot three times at that steel plate that was actually the closest of all the targets, and I missed it all three times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I bet when you said that you were shooting the plates down and you weren't really seeing your sights, you probably were seeing your sights in your subconscious, but you just,
I don't remember, you know, seeing my sights.
Right, you don't remember, right.
I mean,
right. You're
right. I probably was seeing my sight, at least my front sights, but I don't remember a damn thing. All I remember is firing three times and seeing three steel plates fall.
Well, let's put it this way. Unless the plates were like at 3 yards, which I know is not the case because we
no,
have safety rules, then in order for you to hit a 8-inch plate at 10 to 15 yards, which is, I'm guessing, probably what you were talking about.
That's correct.
Unless you were extremely lucky for three shots in a row, you're using your sights and you just don't realize it. And it's a
subconscious thing. As a matter of fact, I actually did that three times. I dropped all plates with just one shot each. And the funny thing is the closest steel target was like 7 or 8 yards, and that was the one I had the most trouble with. I had the trouble with the one that was up close.
Yeah, because you probably weren't, you were probably thinking about what you were trying to do rather than just
exactly
letting it happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting because you're right. I was probably shooting with the subconscious at first, and then I reloaded and I started to think about it, and I'm thinking, okay, I got this round one, and then I must have been doing something. I must have been jerking the trigger, pulling it left, pulling it right, doing something wrong because I'm missing the close one three times in a row.
You're probably jerking it because probably what's happening there is that, especially with the man-on-man thing, is that you start thinking that, you know, oh my God, this guy's getting ahead of me, or that, you know, oh, I'm way ahead of him. All I got to do is just, you know, drop these other three here real quick and this is going to be over. And the whole entire thing of your mind and your ego getting in there in the way of your subconscious of just letting it do its job of seeing the sights on the target and pressing the trigger, you start kind of like overriding it and taking control, and you lose focus, so to speak, of just, you know, you're shooting.
I think you're right. Man, what an absolute science this is, huh?
It's all mental.
You know, I mean, in listening to you talk, yes, it is. And I have to admit, I don't think I really realized that a few months back that it is all mental, but it is.
Yeah, it's definitely all mental. I mean, you know, in the very beginning, yes, it is, you know, the fundamentals of grip, draw, you know, proper sight focus, alignment, getting all the small, you know, mechanical stuff down. But after you get through that, it really becomes a mental game of, you know, just doing everything right, target acquisition, you know, kind of the advanced stuff of seeing what you need to see, so to speak, of seeing the sight recoil out of the notch and come back down and you know, all the little things like that.
So let's close with this. Give something to new shooters and give something to experienced shooters to walk away from this show with. Let's start with the newbies. What would you tell them to, if they want to get to the point where they can start calling their shots, what should they start to work on?
Well, I think that for the new shooters of really trying to strive to work from this shooting from an awareness standpoint, that was a huge leap forward when I started just shooting with an open mind and trying to let the subconscious see things that it didn't see before. And that really, I think, is the first step into learning how to call your shots, because when you're doing this, you don't want to literally focus on the front sight in relationship to the rear notch, relationship to the target, fire the round, think for a second and go, okay, I know where that round was. Because you're literally thinking through the process there of how to do it. And you don't want to be doing that. The true calling your shots is really shooting from an awareness standpoint of your subconscious mind, you know, seeing all this stuff and recording it and then giving the information, to, you know, to do something about it. So I think really for new shooters of just learning to shoot, from a fully aware standpoint, is just a huge step forward, in their shooting abilities.
Okay. That's good. Now for people who've been doing it a while, like me, who've been doing it for a while, that's not quite as good as I need to be. What should I work on?
Well, it sounds like you're really close to being there, and most advanced shooters are probably very close to being there. They're probably already shooting from a awareness standpoint. Mm-hmm. What we need to make sure is that we're not blinking, because if we're blinking, then we can't call our shots. So that's key. Of being able to, you know that they're not blinking and that they are seeing the sights on the target when the gun goes bang. So at that point, they're probably, it's probably kind of almost a thing where you say, okay, I'm going to, every single round I fire, I'm going to mentally record calling that shot. So every time you go to the range, every time you fire a round or whatever, it's like, I know where this one went, I know where that one went, I know where this one went, and you just keep doing that for every single round fired.
And see if I was right, right?
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, you can do the slow fire thing for five rounds and do it that way, and I definitely recommend that exercise to see if you are actually calling your shot. But even if you go out there and throw three targets out at 10 yards or whatever the case is and just, you know, tear them up, but every single round that you're firing, you're seeing the sights aligned, and their alignment to the target and know where it is. And, I don't want to slow things down so much that, you know, you fire around and go, okay, yep, that's where I called it. But just get to the point of like every single round that you're doing at speed and go faster and faster and faster that you know, upper left, upper right, you know, low left, low right, in the middle, da, 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 so on and so forth of doing it at speed. But I like it. The last time I went out to the range and practiced on Thursday for this match that I had yesterday, and I really kind of focused, I shouldn't say a focus on that, but as I was shooting these targets, I was thinking, okay, I'm seeing everything. I know exactly each, I was really kind of striving, saying, okay, I'm going to call every single one of these shots. And I mean, the calling a shot thing, a lot of times it all happens automatically when you're shooting a stage, because most of the time the rounds are going where you want them to go. And every once in a while they don't. And that's in the time of calling your shot. When they don't, you go, okay, you know, I'm going to make up that shot because I realize I just, you know, put one somewhere I didn't want it to go. But what I did on Thursday is every round I fired, I was, you know, consciously calling each one, even though I wasn't going to correct for it. And I didn't need to, but I knew pretty much where, when I fired the round, where it went on each round fired.
Okay. This is scientific stuff, I got to say. I think it is.
Like I said, it's all mental.
It's all mental. I mean, but when I say it's scientific, I mean it's... Okay, I should change my terminology. It's psychological stuff. I mean,
it is psychological
really is.
Stuff. Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me. I was going to mention something too during the last podcast when we were talking about dry firing, and I wanted to mention this before I forget it. But when you dry fire, what do you use for targets when you dry fire? Because I've learned something that I think is key that I think a lot of people could benefit from. So before I go and say it, I'm going to let you tell me what you do.
I'm going to embarrass myself. But that's okay. I don't mind. I use a lot of different things when I dry fire. I use different objects. I'll use a picture on the wall. I'll use something on the TV set. I'll use a book that happens to be sitting on my desk. I will use a cup sitting on a counter. I mean, there's all kinds of things I'll use for dry fire targets.
Okay, so my next question is, so that when you go to an IDPA stage, how many times do you see a cup, a pitcher on a wall, a book, or your TV set?
Never,
of course, a fire?
Never.
Right.
Now, what I did do, here's what I've done a couple of times, and this is my most beneficial dry fire practice. I've actually brought some targets home from the range and put them up on the wall and dry fired at the head many, many times.
Full size targets?
Yeah, what we would call... Not IDPA targets, but what you call those silhouette targets at a square range.
Okay. And that's good. And that's kind of where I was going with this, because I think a lot of people use a lot of times, and I realize that it's you know, a restriction of how much room that you have that you can do your dry fire and where you can do it at. But a lot of people will use, like, you know, third size or one third size, either IDPA or IPSC targets to do their dry fire practice.
Mm-hmm.
To simulate a target at distance. So if you have a one-third size target, you stick a 3 yards, it represents 9 yards. The problem is that shooting is acquiring the target, seeing the target, shifting your vision back to the front sight, seeing as much as the front sight that you need to see, breaking the shot, looking for the next target, and doing the same thing over and over and over. The use of a one-third size target replicates the part about your sight alignment on the target, but it doesn't replicate the part about transitioning your vision or exercising your vision all the way from the target back to your front sight. So you're really only transitioning one third of the distance. And what I found really helped for me is I started using full size IPSC targets, and I would put hardcover on them. So I was restricting the amount of available target to shoot at. And then I was putting them at distance at about 12 yards in my house. And I'm lucky that from my end of my kitchen all the way to the end of my family room where my fireplace is about 12 yards. And I can do my transition dry fire practice using that. So what I'm seeing is exactly what I would see in a course of fire. I'm seeing full size targets. I'm exercising the exact same thing I would in a course of fire. I'm shifting my vision 12 yards from the target back to the front sight. So I'm replicating everything that I would normally do or normally see in a course of fire. And that's why I recommend, when it comes to dry fire, is use the targets that you would normally be seeing in a course of fire. And if you can, use full size targets at distance.
Good point. Good point. I'm now going to do all my dry fire practice that way, because now I kind of, you've kind of made me realize I've been doing it wrong, you know, as far as getting better at competition anyway.
Yeah, for a lot of people, dry fire is just, you know, trigger press, and trying to make sure that they have a clean trigger break. But for me, my dry fire is transition, sight alignment, reloads, draw. I mean, just everything. So to me, dry fire isn't just, you know, feeling the trigger break or whatever. It's everything else that you normally would do. And sometimes I, you know, try to incorporate movement into it too.
So real quickly, would you suggest this? Would you suggest I get in my office like I am right now, put 3 IPSC or IDPA targets on the wall, put some snap caps in my gun, double check and triple check that it's unloaded and only has snap caps in it, and dry fire once at one target, and eject that round, dry fire another, eject that round, dry fire another?
Well, in terms of with my STI, I use, with modern firearms, you don't really need to use a snap cap. However, in a 1911 or with my STI, it does help using one to prevent the firing pin spring from, really compressing. So I do use them. But for me, when I dry fire, is I'm really not actually even breaking, and maybe it's because of the advance of the level that I'm at right now, where I'm at with dry fire, but I very often don't drop the hammer on the STI. So I'm pressing the trigger back to the point where I feel resistance, and I know at that point if I go further, the hammer will drop. But I don't ever, you know, sometimes I'll draw and, you know, break the shot, cock the hammer, draw, break the shot, cock the hammer, draw, break the shot, and do that.
But okay, what if somebody's using a striker fired gun? What would you suggest?
Okay, so with a striker fired gun like my Glock,
yeah.
I learned a trick on that where you take a very small piece of cardstock, and stick it between the breech face and the hood of the barrel, and it puts the gun just slightly out of battery, that you can then press the trigger all the way back, and the trigger is pressing against actually the striker, so you're getting that resistance, and it's a great way. A huge step in my leap forward in learning how to shoot the Glock was doing a lot of dry fire, and I did that trick where you basically just take the thing slightly out of battery, and you're pressing, getting the trigger press, and it's not perfect. I mean, it's not like a complete Glock press where it press and you hit the resistance point, and then, you know, you have the boing, or it breaks. But it does allow you to, you know, keep your finger in that small area there where you can kind of feel it, where it would normally be the reset point and the fire point or whatever, and I can just, you know, wiggle my finger, so to speak, in that little area, and that's how I would do my dry fire.
Okay. Good stuff. Good stuff. I didn't think of that. Thank you.
Sure.
That's why I love these, is because, you know, I there's an old saying. I always realize the more I know, the more I know I need to know.
Yeah, I've heard that before. It's the more you know, the less you think you know, or something like that.
Yeah. I just like to say the more I know, the more I know that I have a lot to learn. And this has been very educational. I appreciate it.
Good. Sure.
Yeah, this is excellent. This is I'm still trying to wrap my brain around this, if you can tell.
Well, and like you said, it's psychological, and a lot of it is kind of like a your own, you know, mind exploration thing of just trying different things and seeing what works. But there are some definite techniques that have been proven, and it's just a matter of, you know, knowing what they are and then working on those, and then using them to your benefit.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it very much. And like I said, we'll do this again. Before we sign off, let's talk about Brian Enos's book.
Right.
And it's called Shooting Fundamentals, right? Is that what it's called?
Practical Shooting Beyond Fundamentals.
Practical Shooting Beyond. Okay, I'm going to order it tomorrow for sure. And for the listeners' benefit, what we're going to do is we're going to take this probably 1 or 2 chapters at a time.
It may be less than that. I don't recall how many chapters they are, but it may literally be half a chapter at first. It really depends on what the subject of the chapters are, but because this book is really a psychological mind trip, I would probably resist the urge to try to move too far or too fast, because you really need to get your head wrapped around you know, a lot of what he's talking about. And, I don't really want to, I don't think you should really go forward until you really understand.
Yeah.
Or think you understand at least, or vaguely comprehend the concepts or whatever, that we're discussing. So.
Well, I know you've read it, what, 5 or 6 times?
Took me 5 times.
So, and I'll be reading it for the first time. But, you know, for people listening to this show, what Steve and I are going to do is get on Skype probably at least once a month and talk about that book, talk about the techniques that are in that book and how we can apply them not just to competition shooting, but also apply them to self-defense. Are you game with that?
I'm game with that, yeah.
Okay. I should probably have it in a week. No need to borrow yours. I'll get my own copy because I like to write notes all over the place and highlight stuff. And
I did the same thing with mine. I got yellow highlights all throughout the book. So.
Yeah, I like to use an orange highlighter, and so I'll probably whip out my orange highlighter and just, you know, maim that whole thing.
There you go.
This is great. Thanks. I appreciate you coming on again.
Sure. Always glad to do it. Love talking about competition shooting and the shooting sport. So.
Oh man, I could go on for 3 hours, but we'll save that for some other shows.
My iPhone battery would be dead probably by then, but yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah, and you know what? I want to tell everybody. Can you believe that he's talking on an iPhone right now? I mean, that's amazing. I mean, technology is ridiculous. I'm not. I'm using my headset and my computer, but it's just so cool that you're on an iPhone doing this. This is great.
iPhone and Skype are your friend. Yeah, it works out really well.
No kidding. iPhone and Skype. I mean, I'm using Skype right now, but it's on my computer. Maybe I'm going to experiment with the iPhone. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. Steve Zofi, everybody, USPSA, masterclass shooter, a wealth of knowledge, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Okay, sounds good. We'll talk to you again soon, Bob.
All right, thanks.
All right.